I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Unless you've got a lot of money or political capital invested in pretending it didn't happen, you probably don't dispute the fact that Russia interfered with America's election in 2016. Almost everybody agrees.
New evidence of Russia's determination to interfere in our election. A bipartisan report from the Senate Intelligence Committee details how Russia targeted voting systems in all 50 states.
And almost everyone who investigates this kind of stuff thinks it's going to happen again.
FBI Director Christopher Wray warning Russia is continuing its attempts to meddle in U.S. elections, effectively saying 2016 was just a test drive.
This is the new world. This is how countries, at least some countries, engage in foreign affairs these days. It's a genie that's not going back in the bottle. And since Canada is the country most affected by what happens in the United States, we're impacted by everything from trade to the economy to national security, etc. There's a difficult question that we need to ask. If using the internet to meddle in other countries' elections is the game that's being played now, do we need to get off the bench and interfere ourselves? What do we lose if we do that? What's at risk if we don't? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Stephen Marsh is a Toronto-based writer, author, and he posed this difficult question in The Walrus. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Jordan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Can you start, I guess, by explaining the landscape of the 2020 presidential election as it pertains to us in Canada?
Well, I think two things have really become very clear recently. One is that Russia and other actors, probably Iran and China, but mostly Russia, are going to involve themselves pretty seriously in social media distortion and media distortion of the and interference in the American election. And they're getting more sophisticated about it every day. And on the other hand, the American political and technological elite are doing virtually nothing to stop it. Trump has said he will veto any bill that goes through about election interference, and Facebook is making no change to its political ad policies. So those are the sort of practical realities on the ground. And, you know, we saw what happened in the 2016 election. It's very hard to get people to take memetic conflict seriously. But I think at this point, we actually have to start thinking about this as a country.
Well, what's at stake, I guess, for Canada in terms of political issues in this election?
You know, our relationship to America is not like, any other country's relationship really to any other country. I mean, a huge amount of our 2 million jobs in this country depend directly on trade with NAFTA partners. And also, like, we share this massive border with this country that has an enormous military. So we really can't afford to be, to wait and see what happens with the United States. Like, we need to be proactive and think about how we can respond to the challenges that their, you know, imminent intellectual political collapse faces us with.
Okay, well, now you're kind of tiptoeing around it. So what should we do?
Well, I think we should do exactly what, I mean, I think we could be a little more sophisticated in those. I mean, I think what we need to do is actually interfere in the American elections through the means that have been provided by the U.S. government. So, like, we need to buy media ads. We need to target media ads in various districts for our national interests. And I think we have to keep our national interests really clear and really bipartisan. Like, it's not like we want a more liberal America. What we want is a more democratic America, which is not something that is necessarily going to be preserved under the current, like, American democracy and the democratic institutions are being stressed constantly. And also, of course, we want NAFTA we want a trade deal to go through that we require. That's virtually an existential issue for us. So we have very clear political goals, and we kind of have to use this method to use them. I mean, it's horrible. It's not. Of course, it doesn't fit with our ethos at all. But I really don't see what choice we have.
How can we, I guess, look America in the eye is the wrong way to put it. But if we consider ourselves, you know, the closest ally that they have, or at least we'd like to, how can we do that? How could we actually engage in their political affairs without betraying that?
Just remember that, like, they called us a national security threat about a year ago.
Right.
Over some nonsense about steel, like over nothing. Like all the allegiances, all the other stuff, like they all our sacrifices, like they do not pay attention to that at all, right? And similarly, like they're so localized and so kind of blind to anything that isn't within their borders that they forget what anyone does. Like Russian interference, like they're angry about it, but there are no consequences for Russia. I mean, a few slaps on the wrist in terms of some trade consequences, but really, really very little. So, you know, one of the things is it's ridiculous to think we are looking America in the eye. They don't look at us at all. So they won't even notice what we're doing, right? I mean, they don't notice anyone other than themselves.
So what would our engaging with this actually look like on the ground? I mean, you mentioned like we'd be buying Facebook ads. When I say we, is that the Canadian government? Is it?
Absolutely. The Canadian government. Yes. I mean, who else would do it?
What happens like, when it becomes clear?
Well, why do we have a government?
Paying?
We have a government to look after our national security. That is the first responsibility of a government is to ensure our national security. I mean, I would say the second one is probably to ensure our economic integrity, right? I mean, that's very high on the list of things that the government does. I mean, the government already does this. Like during the trade war, we hit whiskey producers in Mitch McConnell's, you know, state. We hit Wisconsin very specifically to hurt Paul Ryan.
Right.
Right. Like we already target our trade, you know, our tariffs very particularly to individual members, to individual districts sometimes, individual congressional districts. Well, if we're doing that at great expense to us and at great cost to our industry, like why not buy just simply, you know, if we're already interfering in these elections in that way, like by making individual members districts feel things, well, why wouldn't we do that in a way that's virtually free? Russia, like the IRA program from Russia, cost virtually nothing. The cost was negligible. I mean, it really had no like compared to a military budget, negligible. $25 million, nothing.
So here's the question then. Do we admit to it? Because Russia's not admitted to it, or at least not openly really admitted to it. And if somebody says, are you guys meddling in the U.S. election? We say, well, yeah, of course, it's our interests at stake.
No, I think we would definitely not admit it. I mean, why would we admit it? I mean, like, it would simply be, you know, something that we would, this is mimetic warfare, right? Like, that's the nature of this. There is a struggle through the means of narrative production for control over stories, and through stories for control over political spheres. So that's happening, right? Like it
right.
is a very confusing and ugly war, but it's very real. And the consequences of it can be seen in Ukraine and in Syria and everywhere else. And it is a question of whether, you know, obviously we do not want a narrative where we are interfering in the American election. So yeah, it would be dishonest, yeah. But I don't really think that that's necessarily that much of a problem. I mean, we're talking about politics here. Like, I don't think lying is that unusual. I mean, another word for it would be diplomacy, you know?
Yeah. So we'd set up a third party, kind of like, I guess, a federal version of Ontario Proud or Canada Proud. And it just goes out there and buys Facebook time, buys Twitter time, and throws up some memes and GIFs.
Well, and you know, I mean, like the new tactic for the Russian that just was announced on Rolling Stone is what they do is they create these avatars that they then the first thing that they do is create positive feelings through awe, So a lot of the most popular things that anyone is linked on are direct products of Russian, you know, Russian internet. Trolls is the word that they use for it, but they're not really trolls. They're agents.
Yeah.
And then once they do that, then they slowly start to build disgust at American institutions through, you know, the means that are already, through the disgust that it's already building through America. So that literally helps the disintegration of American political institutions. It's in our interest to stop that. You know, and as I said, like, if America banned this, if the U.S. government said this is wrong and we're going to veto it, like, we're going to ban this, and Facebook said we're not going to allow this kind of political advertising, we're allies. We would not do it, right?
Yeah.
But they haven't said that. They have not said that. So how are we supposed to, like, we are right now in a situation where they are allowing themselves to be influenced by foreign powers, and we're just simply reaping the rule. And the cost to us is that the world's largest military declares us a national security threat. So, you know, at a certain point, you have to actually realize the game that you're playing.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Not to be all patriotic and annoying about this, but don't we lose the moral high ground if we start doing that kind of stuff? And don't we want to be the kind of country that doesn't do it?
Well, would you rather have the moral high ground and have an autocrat in the White House?
No.
Or would you rather lose the moral high ground and have a democracy, a fully fledged democracy to the South?
Right.
I mean, first of all, I don't really think like that kind of morality is particularly like this is I think when we use the term mimetic warfare, you know, we are in a struggle over narrative that one side is going to win. And if our narrative is that we're too good to get involved in this, right, if that's then that is a very quick way to lose.
Yeah. Well,
I've convinced you, haven't I?
You kind of have
convinced
me. It
seems like an absurd argument.
I just feel dirty, that's all.
No one's going to do this. Well, what are we fighting for? Like, I think one thing is, like, what do we want from America? Well, one thing is the trade deal, which is good for everybody. And the other thing is we actually need to strengthen democracy. It's in our interests for them to be to have strong political institutions. So Russia and Iran and China are just going to use these things to destroy American institutions. We don't want that. That's not our interest. Like, they are our friends. We want to build them up. That's in our interest to do. Like, it's not actually a bad thing, right? Like, for America to remain a democracy. Like, I think that's worth fighting for.
So our interference could look something like a mimetic warfare campaign that props up institutions. Like, you should make sure the DOJ is apolitical, and we should maintain an arm's length distance in terms of separations of powers. And these are the things that make America great. And we're kind of like, we're that actor in this scenario?
Well, I think it's more, to me, that's part of it. Like, that's what the Russians are doing, the exact opposite of that.
Right.
So we could, in fact, do that. But I think, to me, what our real strength is that we have a really heightened familiarity with America and a cultural familiarity with America that's really unparalleled. Like, no one in Russia understands America the way that even you or I talking on this phone do. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we have family there. We have, you know, I've lived there. Like, we, you know, and everyone has, like, you know, it's been back and forth for a long time. So we all have American friends. I mean, you know, it's not like we're really that, we're super familiar with them. I mean, I think it would be that we would identify, you know, who are the members of the anti-democratic right? Who are the members of the anti-trade right and left? Bernie Sanders is a major threat to our trade negotiations, right? Like, this is not necessarily a left or right thing. This is a national interest thing. And then we would target them. I mean, that's what Russia does too.
So this is the part of it. When I when I suggested that I had serious misgivings about it, this is the part of it that gets to me. I do agree that it's one thing to actively encourage and prop up democratic nations, especially allies. It's another thing to start getting into judging the various presidential candidates and interceding on behalf of whichever ones we might think are the best for us, when it's still like it's not our election.
Oh, it's definitely, well, it's not our election, but it affects us enormously, right? And we're not going into this, like, let's take a person like Matt Bevins, former governor of Kentucky, right? Like, this is a man who openly spoke about armed revolution in the United States, right? And over, like, if Hillary Clinton got elected, like, blood, you know, blood watering the tree of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a person who is very, like, that kind of politics in America has very serious consequences for us. Very serious. And I mean, we've lived through 3 years of the Trump administration. Like, do you need any other evidence that even our sovereignty is at stake? Like, existential questions are at stake for us. They absolutely are. So, you know, I don't think we really have a choice here.
I don't disagree with that. But when we start getting into, well, Bernie Sanders would be much worse for the new NAFTA deal than, say, Pete Buttigieg or somebody else, that's when we're kind of picking and choosing based on our own economic interests. Not like, I agree with the kind of the fate of the free world is at stake. That's actually not a hyperbole anymore, but this part of it feels off to me.
They have opened the doors, right? I mean, they have made, like, if this is for sale.
Yeah.
American politics is for sale. Like, it is, you can buy and sell it, right? You can buy and sell American power. Well, who does it matter more to than us? And if people are buying, we should buy, right? I mean, if it's for sale, I don't think it should be for sale. But if it's for sale, we have to buy. And not only that, we can buy.
We don't get to make the rules, but we do have to play the game.
Well, it's just simply, like, you know, all national security questions are ugly, right? But I think it's part of this is, like, recognizing the battleground here. Like, when you go into a foreign country and you have to kill people, that's very ugly, too. But, like, the battleground here is over a narrative. And I actually think it actually helps very small countries like us. Like, very small countries who don't have a lot of power, who could never compete on a geopolitical landscape like us. Like, we actually are kind of good at narrative, you know? Like, we know how these systems work. And, you know, my point really in this article is, like, this is the world that we live in now. And how are we going to respond as a nation? Because I think one thing is that inactivity is not a choice. Like, if we decide, we're going to take the moral high ground here, and not involve ourselves and let other countries interfere in the American political process, well, that's very much a choice. That inactivity is very much a decision.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. I guess what I still can't wrap my head around is the difference between acting on behalf of our own national interest and the interest of democracy, and then the second level of that, which is acting on behalf of individual politicians.
Well, when we took Mitch McConnell's, you know, when we put subsidies on whiskey from which Mitch McConnell's district, I mean, what were we doing? We were saying we want this guy out of power.
Yeah, fair
right?
enough.
And we do that all the time. Like, we do that all the time. So why would we be so slapdash about it? And I mean, are we only doing that when it's really expensive? Because there's really cheap ways to do that. And, you know, like, comparatively speaking. And so, like, what are our principles here? Like, are we not interfering at all ever? Or because then we have to change our policy right now. Or is it just that we don't want to interfere effectively? I mean, that seems to be our current policy. We'll interfere, but we don't want to be good at it.
I think the biggest difference between the two things you just described is the tariffs against Mitch McConnell's district were done by our government publicly in a transparent way, whereas this would
right.
be the opposite of that.
Mm. It would, yeah. I mean, it would be interesting I assume maybe that's the answer, that we do it openly. I mean, that would actually be quite a statement. Like, we're going to buy Facebook ads for various people, you know, like, and it's paid for by Canada. That might actually be pretty funny. But that might also have its own narrative effect.
Well, listen, we have ministers of basically everything now, so we can have a minister of this.
Well, I think this is a job for the Minister of Defense already, but, I think we have, like, this to me is really very much a existential threat issue. Like, it's a security issue. That's what it is.
And now I'm going to be watching the ads I see on Facebook when I'm traveling much more closely.
Right. Good idea.
Thank you for walking us through this maybe hypothetical scenario.
Yes. Well, I mean, the world is getting very weird, right? I mean, like, this is like the Rolling Stone piece about Russian action, like the new Russian techniques are, you know, they're very advanced. And if we're playing catch up, like we have to think through our response rather than just let them own the whole battlefield.
Thanks, Stephen.
Pleasure, Jordan.
Stephen Marsh of The Walrus and many other publications. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. If you'd like to talk to us, head to The Big Story FPN. We try not to share Russian memes. You can also find us on your favorite podcast player, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, pick one. Head there, rate us, review us, tell your friends. Claire Broussard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers. And Elisa Nielsen is our digital editor. And I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll talk Monday.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.